Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 25th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And those files can serve as a tutorial for you. If you're not able to be on the show live and ask questions and get support in doing a worksheet, if you listen to those shows where we have stepped other people through the worksheet process, you can learn how to use this tool to great effect and, with practice, actually master its use in your life. Again, in this work, mastery is that state of always being a student. So we encourage people to do all of those things soon and often because it frequently leads to comments or questions or answers or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code and turn on your microphone, and we can have a conversation. It's always wonderful when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. Our intention with this work is to be of service, and that's far easier to do when we know what specifically is on your mind for today, what kinds of questions or comments or successes or struggles are you dealing with, and that helps us make our time in this 2 hours far more relevant. We can directly address or discuss something that's on your mind. We have been doing the Way of Mastery since January 10th. We've been working our way through it in a rather methodical fashion. Some would say painfully slow. Others would say just perfect. We've read each of the first five lessons at least twice with commentary and sidebars. And in the past couple days, we've begun to work on lesson six. And as prelude to going into that and reading some more, I would just like to say my presenting this work, this book itself, and my presenting it here on Mindshifters Radio fits and makes sense for me because I view this as another set of tools. And as Guy Finley likes to say, there's nothing more practical than true spirituality. And when I invited Pierre Pratervand to be interviewed for this internet show, it's because his book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, in my personal experience, was a very practical set of tools to use to improve the quality of my life. The actual reality management worksheet process itself, as I say in the introduction, is part of some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. So it's in that same vein that I am reading, sharing, commenting on, presenting for your edification and enjoyment the Way of Mastery. And you can do with it what you will. You can use it as a sleep aid. You can put this, the recording of this show on, and it'll probably put you to sleep in the first 5 minutes of listening to it. But you could also choose to use it as a template for developing a tool in your life, a tool for a very targeted mindfulness that you can engage in actively throughout each day. And the essence of this work is that we are the ones individually, internally creating our experience of life, that our true nature is love, that we don't have to create love, we don't have to create an ability to experience it. We simply need to go inside of ourselves and remove everything that's less than that and all of the trivialities in the intellectual mind, all of the judgments and negativities. And once we identify those, this book suggests that we then offer those to the Holy Spirit, offer those to the Christ mind, offer those to the intuition, creativity, the unconscious. The reason for that is because what most of us have been trained and conditioned to do here in the Western world is to think about it when we discover an obstacle and then think about with our intellectual mind how we can overcome that obstacle or what to do about it, which, as David Bohm points out, is simply doing more of the same thing that created the obstacle, hoping the obstacle will go away. And all it does is get bigger, deeper, broader, higher, and we stay stuck behind the obstacle. So we left off yesterday, and The Way of Mastery, page 75. Lesson 6 is titled, Love Heals All Things. And at the bottom of page 75, there's a heading that reads, All You Need Is Love. Now, of course, in order for that to be true, you have to have either a very specific or a very general definition for love. Or you have to be just talking about some platitude, some toss-off comment. The text reads, All you need is love. Love fulfills all things. Love embraces all things. Love heals all things. love transforms all things. Therefore, remember well, you and only you can become the cause of your fulfillment, your peace, and your completion of time. This requires that you do nothing except to remember to establish the connection with your Creator. Is it not true that what you desire most of all is love? Is it not true that you hope that each relationship, no matter how short, no matter what its form, that each journey, that each undertaking will allow you to experience peace? Is it not true that you, who find yourselves in and as a physical body, temporarily in time, is it not true that the grandest of experiences you have known have been those that seem to flood the very cells of the body with love, with a sublime bliss and peace? So please accept that truth, that what you desire beyond all things is the living experience of love. And then remember this, quote, nothing you do can bring love to you. Nothing you do can keep love from yourself in a form of your choosing. Nothing you do can make love appear in the form of your insistence. I'll read that again. Please remember this. Nothing you do can bring love to you. Nothing you do can keep love for yourself in a form of your choosing. Nothing you do can make love appear in the form of your insistence. Love is just love. Love is always what it is. Love embraces all things, allows all things, accepts all things, and thereby transcends all things. Love is all things. So nothing you do can bring love to you, because you're made of this energy of creation that some call love. And nothing you do can keep love for yourself in just the specific form that you want it. Oh, I love it so much when my beloved says or does this. Oh, I want so much for the world to be just like this. Nothing you do can make love, the energy of creation, the energy of existence, conform to what you desire. The text goes on to say, release the drama. Release the dream and choose to remember the truth that is true always. We've mentioned that several times. What is the truth that's true always? You remain as you were created to be. You are the extension of the creative energy in form. You are the extension of love in form. You are one really solid, good way to think about what your purpose in life is, to be a conduit for the creative energy. Another way to say it is, your purpose in life is to bless creation, moment to moment, whatever arises. Love that. Bless that. Accept that. Allow that. Embrace that. And thereby transcend that. So the suggestion here is that in order to release the drama, release the dream, and focus on what's true always, return to the kingdom within yourself, within your mind-heart energy system, just prior to every breath. Remind yourself and say the following to your Creator. I want only that which is true always. Love is what I want. Love is what you are and life is. Love is what I receive. Love is who I am. I and my Creator are one. Just breathe into that. The text goes on to say, hear And here alone do you discover what you seek. Then you become free to walk this earth, to be in this world, but not of it at all. And though your friends will look upon you and still see a man or a woman who seems to act much like them, yet though they see it not, Christ dwells with them. Something in them keeps attracting them to you. They're not sure what it is. Not sure if it's the shape of your body or the radiance of your eyes. However, it is not these things. They feel the quality of love. They resonate with it when you extend love without all the garbage in between. When you become the clear, transparent conduit for that energy of creation. Can you imagine walking upon this earth and no matter where you are, feeling as though every wisp of cloud and every blade of grass and all good things under heaven and earth already are residing with you within this sphere of your continence? Can you imagine walking upon the earth and sensing that the light from the farthest of stars shines during the night, and that it's already within you, that the whole of creation was held in the palms of your own hands? Would there be room yet to convince yourself that there is something you lack, something you need? Would there be any room to convince yourself that the restlessness that you feel is valid? Question that for yourself. The answer will become clearer. The text continues. In truth, you are like one who has been given a perfect treasure, a priceless jewel. You have placed it in your pocket and then forgotten that you possess it. So now you run around trying to look into everybody else's pocket. You've tried to seduce certain ones to surrender to you so that you can own their clothing and therefore try to possess the jewel that you hope is in their pocket. However, the great truth is that you cannot possess love until you set it free. You cannot move into holy relationship with anyone or anything until you give up all trace of need to possess it. When your only desire is love, you will be willing to set anyone free to support him or her in their own journey, no matter what it is or what it takes. Yet you will never feel yourself You will never feel your love waver. If a twinge of sadness arises because you recognize that two bodies in time and space are now going to go to separate parts of the planet, as that twinge arises, you will recognize it as the effect of a mistaken perception. You will move within to the place in which all minds are joined. You will remember that your fulfillment does not rest in gaining love from another, but in giving love to everyone. If indeed you would know the truth that sets you free, heed each and every word that is being shared here. Now, this is going to roil the waters. This is going to make all the garbage churn up, because especially here in the Western world, we are taught that we need to be in relationship, that we need to have love from other people, that we need certain people to be and to do and to say and to stay and not leave. So I'm going to back up and and work with this a little bit, because this says, look, the truth of the matter is you're made of this stuff called love that you say you're looking for from outside of you. And when you go looking for it outside of you, it's like you possess it, you've put it in one of your cargo pants pockets, and then you forgot it's there. And now you're going around searching everyone you see, trying to get them to say and do and be just the right way so that you feel this loving energy that you think you need to get it from them. And, of course, now your conscious awareness is focused outside of yourself, outside of the truth of your nature as love. So you don't get the conscious experience of that loving energy, because what you're focusing your conscious awareness on is that you lack it and that you've got to go searching for it. Whether you're searching for God, you want to know God, whether you're searching for the perfect partner or the perfect job, and all of that focus on the external that's driven by a sense of needing something, missing something, wanting something, is the series of roadblocks, the series of obstacles, perceiving that you are what you're looking for. This is from that quote from Francis of Assisi. When you go out on a search for God, for light, for love, for enlightenment, for holiness, for wholeness, what you're looking for is the very essence of consciousness that's doing the looking. You are what you're looking for. You are the essence of the creative energy expressing in form. And when you can use some of these tools and slow down and question and ask to be shown and be looking inside and get introduced to that, then this seeking on the outside, even as they've talked about in this book already, seeking to know God ceases to be useful. The need for that has ended because you have awakened to your presence, your existence as the extension of the energy of creation that you call God, that you call light, that you call love. That is the essence of your experience. And you can make it your conscious experience, or you can create a conscious experience that's diametrically opposed to that. I'm lonely. I'm feeling empty. I'm feeling unfulfilled. I'm feeling a yearning. What this book, all these words are trying to point us towards is an experience. So here's some words. Can you imagine walking upon the earth and no matter where you are, feeling as though every wisp of cloud, every blade of grass, and all good things under heaven and earth are already inside you, in your consciousness, in your awareness, that they are literally arising from the essence of what you are? Can you imagine walking upon the earth and sensing that the light from the farthest of stars that shines down on you at night, that that's already within you, that your essence, this consciousness, contains all things, is all things? Well, the fact of the matter is, no, we can't even imagine that. But here's some words to try and point us toward the experience that nothing in our culture has prepared us for or taught us to practice. It goes on to say, look, the fact of the matter is you have been given a perfect treasure and a priceless jewel. And it says here that you have placed it in a pocket, but the fact of the matter is your family, your culture, your language has hidden that truth from your conscious awareness. You have been trained to think that you are not it, that you are not enough, that love is outside of you, that you need relationship with somebody else in order to feel your essence. The truth is you've been hoodwinked to believe that you are not what you're looking for. And so it's almost as though somebody handed you a perfect jewel, the essence of everything you could ever want or desire, true fulfillment, fullness, wholeness, awareness of the truth of life. and then you hit it someplace where you're sure you'll never forget it, and then you forgot where you hit it. And you look around in all the places that you've got in your mind and in your life and in your job and in your relationships, and you say, gee, I'm just not feeling it. It must not be here. It must be over there in relationship with that person or in that job or in the acquisition of that vehicle or that house or that total in my bank account. I better seduce that person. I better run away from that person. I better attack that person. I better manipulate that person to try and get them to do and be what I want them to be so I can find the jewel that's probably hidden in their luggage or in their pocket. And the essence of this is you cannot possess love because it is what you are. You can't get it. You can't gain it because you already have it. It is you. And you cannot move into a holy relationship with anyone or anything as long as you're feeling you need something from them, because you're not taking conscious awareness of your true nature into the interaction with them. You're taking this illusion, this dream of separation, this feeling of lack, this hallucination that says you're not enough and they have to do or be something to fulfill you. And that's what you take into relationship, and that's how you prevent actual holy relationship from being your experience. The text goes on and says, when your only desire is love, which means the accurate experience of your true nature, when that is your only desire, you will be willing to set anyone free and to support him or her in their own journey, no matter what it is or what it takes. And when you're in that state, you will always be in constant awareness of your true nature as love. There will be no wavering of your experience of that loving energy. And you'll feel it amplify and magnify. The more you give it away, the more you feel it, the more you get it, the more you are it, the more you give it away, the more you feel it, etc. It's an energy exchange that's always there and always on. And the only thing that prevents you from experiencing it is where you're focusing your conscious awareness in each moment. If you focus your conscious awareness, Michael Rice calls it your mind energy, on thoughts that you're not enough and that you lack this and that somebody else needs to change this or that in order for you to feel peace or love or wholeness, that becomes your experience. And that never changes the truth that is true always, which is that you are always everything that you need, and anything that you would truly desire that you might be looking for is contained in the essence of your consciousness. Once you reach that state, if a twinge of sadness arises because you recognize that your lover, who seems to reside in a separate body, is now going to go to a separate part of the planet, as that twinge arises, you will recognize it as the effect of a mistaken perception. This takes us right back to Lesson 3, where it says, let's build on Lesson 1 and 2 that introduce us to this observation that we are the ones individually creating our experience of life in each moment. And in Lesson 3, let's wake up and realize that we are the ones who've created our experience of every other person we've ever interacted with. And so every time we've experienced them as something less than love, it's because in the instant before we have that experience, we chose to deny that we were creating our own experience of life. And in the next moment, projection happens, and a picture of them shows up in our mind wearing our pain as the cause of our pain or fear or sadness. So we believe they are something less than the shimmering radiance of the creative life force expressing in form, and we project into our mind's image of them causing our upset. And that happens in less than a heartbeat as soon as we forget the first axiom, which is that I and I alone create my experience of life. That paragraph reads again, if a twinge of sadness arises because I recognize that two bodies in space are now going to go to separate parts of the planet, as the twinge arises, if I've been doing this kind of work, I will recognize that that twinge is the effect of a mistaken perception, that in that moment, I am not seeing life the way the creator of all things is seeing things. I'm not seeing myself accurately. I'm not seeing the other person accurately. I am creating a distortion, a hallucination, an illusion. I'm creating the negativity. And as soon as I realize that as a mistaken perception, I will move within, which is basically what's called for as the act of forgiveness in the third lesson of this work, and I will apply that tool of forgiveness to dismantle my false perception. And I will get in touch with that place inside of me where all minds are joined. And I will remember in that instant that my fulfillment does not rest in gaining anything, especially love, from another person. My fulfillment rests in seeing, feeling, experiencing my true nature as love and actively extending the experience of that to everyone and everything I meet. The next paragraph says, if indeed you would know the truth that sets you free, please heed each and every word that is being shared here. If you would taste the sweet nectar of perfect freedom, then be committed to replacing every erroneous perception you've ever made and every thought you've ever held of everyone and everything. Replace them. Every thought, every perception that's ever led you to feel negative, sadness, hurt, pain, fear, shame, guilt, anger, confusion, replace every one of those, every thought and every perception. Replace them with what? Replace them with this look inside to your true nature of yourself, the understanding that of yourself you do nothing, that you didn't create yourself and you don't even know when you were created, that there is this energy of creation moving through you, living life in, through, as, and around you, and that everyone you interact with has that as their true nature, that their true nature is not the visual, the tactile, the auditory perception that you generate about them. It says, set these things aside and commit the fullness of your energy to the simple but vigilant practice of remembering the truth, even prior to every breath. And here's that truth they recommend that we bring ourselves back to. Quote, I live and yet not I, but the Christ mind dwells within me. Therefore, I submit and surrender to the truth, capital T truth, and the truth that is true always. My fulfillment comes only from allowing Christ to be given to the world. My fulfillment can only come by getting in touch with the rooted center of my being, my true nature, and consciously extending that to everyone and everything in every interaction. And of course, this is not what we're taught in our culture. We're taught that if we're in a relationship with somebody and they choose to move to another part of the country or they choose to end the relationship with us, that's going to generate pain and fear and sadness and hurt and loss, and that's wrong because we should never let a relationship go and we need to stay committed. And then just notice what I generate within myself when I pour mind energy into those thoughts. And notice what this work and a lot of other deep spiritual traditions are trying to wake us up to is that in every moment where I'm choosing for anger and fear and grief and bitterness and hurt and sadness and loss, in every moment, complete fulfillment, gratitude for the gift of life, the vibrant energy of all creation, the realization that everything I experience is contained within my consciousness, that I am here probably most usefully to see myself as the conduit of the creative energy extending in form, and that that alone will fulfill me and give me the fulfillment that my heart yearns for. The text goes on to say, the truth is very simple. It is not complex at all. Get out of the way and let love live through you. And all of a sudden, you will know that indeed you are given all good things eternally. You will know that grace is reality. You will know that effortlessness is the way of life in the kingdom. Again, this rankles the Western mind. What do I do? What do I do then? Okay, so I stop and I realize I'm love. Then what do I do? And then what do I do? And that's that conscious logical mind kicking in. That's the intellectual mind in this work, which they tell us right in the very first lesson, the intellectual mind was only ever and always intended to be a very simple servant to something else. To what is that? Well, we don't really have words for it. In this book, they call it the awakened heart. Many of us have never experienced it, us, our true nature, an expanded experience of life that goes beyond the five senses. But there is what this book would call the witness. There is what some people would call the observer. There is what some people would call the seat of the soul, which is an experience I can usher myself into that allows me to watch the part of my mind that strives and doesn't know how to allow, that grasps and pushes away. And I can watch it from that distant perspective, that witness or seat of the soul perspective, and just playfully explore how that is creating an experience for me. And from that less intense, attached, identified perspective of observation, I begin to see the truth of how I have created all of my own upset. And then I get to explore what might it be like to play with this last paragraph where it says the truth is very simple. It's not complex at all. It's possible for me to get out of the way and let love, capital L love, live through me. It's possible that if I did that, all of a sudden I would know that indeed I'm given all good things eternally. It's possible that I would then know that grace is always reality. And I would see a way to exist with effortlessness, allowing the flow of life to move in, through, as, and around me, and to understand that that is a reliable way to experience everything I say I want. All good things. Guy Finley has a quote. First time I heard it, I thought he was just joking around. The more I heard it, the more I listened to it, the more I recognized, even though he's a wordsmith, at different levels he's tapped into some very deep truths. And so he said, all good things come to those for whom the good is all things. And the more I see this, the more I say, well, that's exactly what this way of mastery is telling us. Because forgiveness, which is another word for love, which is another word for the Christ mind, which is another word for the one mind, the Creator, allows all things, embraces all things, surrenders to all things, and thereby transcends all things. In this chapter, it says, love embraces all things, allows all things, trusts all things, accepts all things, surrenders to all things, and thereby transcends all things. The message in this work is that love is your true essence, so that your true essence, your higher self, allows all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, surrenders to all things, and thereby transcends all things. It also says judgment, labeling this as good or bad, judgment at any level is the opposite of love. It's the opposite of that process of forgiveness. It's the opposite of seeing things clearly, with capital T, true perception. The spiritual faculty of being able to see things as they actually are, rather than through our conscious logical mind's process of perception, which uses the input from the senses, the five senses, and the conditioning of our culture and our language to create all of these images of conflict and strife and bitterness and hurt and grief and sadness and resentment. The truth of life doesn't contain any of that. The truth of life is just this flow of creative energy. All of those words I just listed and their associated negative sensations are a creation of the human mind and of the process of thought that's churning through all the trivialities that have been shoved into the intellectual mind that this book tells us about. In each and every present moment, it is possible to breathe and soften and experience life as a magnificent flow of the creative energy that goes beyond words each new heartbeat. But to do that, I've got to put aside everything I think I want, my trifling treasures put away. This is the definition of forgiveness from A Course in Miracles. I have to be willing to allow all things, trust all things, embrace all things, surrender to all things. That's the only way to transcend all things. That comes out of the way of mastery. So, the next paragraph says, you know, it just said, you will know that effortlessness is the way of life in the kingdom. Paragraph says, but effortlessness does not mean that you do not feel, for you are in a dimension of feeling. Effortlessness does not mean that you do not discover how to deepen your ability to be the living embodiment of love. It does not mean that you do not challenge yourself to learn to express love in a way that can be heard by another. Effortlessness means simply that you abandon the resistance to what love, capital L love, requires in each moment. So my mind now is saying, so what's the definition of effortlessness in this work? Let's talk about it this way, that they introduced right in the first lesson. Effortlessness begins with the recognition that my conscious logical mind, my intellect, was designed as a very simple tool, as a servant to something far more vast and integrated. Now, what that is, you can call it the unconscious, you can call it your true self, you can call it In this work, they call it the awakened heart. Doesn't matter what you call it. What matters is that you move yourself into an experience of something other than the intellect, the conscious logical mind, the pattern of thought that was programmed into you. In this book, they call it the trivialities that have been stuffed into you through language, through family, through culture, through judgment. How do you see that and not buy into it? Effortlessness in this work might be the same as questioning, asking, living in the question. What's mine to do here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? How can I bless creation in this moment? What is it that wants to express through me from this energy of creation, life, desire? In lesson four, they call it desire. Effortlessness in this work, as they just gave us the definition, sounds a lot like abandoning any resistance to what love, life, God, creation wants to express through me in each moment. What it might require for me to extend that loving, creative energy in each moment. And to abandon my resistance to it is the same as effortlessness, is the same as allowing, is the same as surrendering. Asking to be shown might be a good way to help yourself proactively define what is effortlessness. How does it look? Now, if you're like most of us, raised in the Western world, once you say, okay, I'll ask, and then what do I do? And then what do I? And that's the intellect coming in. That's like the hammer for the carpenter deciding it's going to hit everything that it sees. But the carpenter knows the hammer is only useful in very select situations. And it's used very sparingly, especially if the carpenter is making fine furniture. She knows there are a lot of other tools to use besides a hammer. In this analogy, the hammer is the intellectual mind. And so, the witness in this work, the observer, the seat of the soul in different works, your higher consciousness, Holy Spirit working through you, can understand that the intellect is not the tool to use after you've asked the question, what do I truly desire? What's mine to do here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? And that is the confounding factor for most of us on a path like this. How do I get my partner to relate to me lovingly? I've chosen love. I'm feeling love. And now here she comes, and she's got a scowl on her face. Ah, how can I, dot, dot, dot. That's me. That's the hammer. That's the intellect. That's the tool deciding to try and run the show. That will never work. It's not my job to get anybody else to do anything. It's my job to move into effortlessness, and here it is. Effortless means simply that you abandon the resistance to what love, the creative energy, requires of you in each moment. So effortlessness could be equated with asking. How can I recognize the tension that arises in me when I perceive a scowl on my love's face? And turn the focus inside and quickly catch and monitor the earliest warning sign inside me of tension, of resistance, of a process that will run the ship, run the day, unless I dismantle it, unless I recognize I'm creating that inside myself. My love may actually have a scowl on her face. That's not causing the tension that arises within me. every bit of energy that I focus on, the scowl on her face, or the words she's saying, or the energy she's using to say them, takes me further and further away from my ability to be the presence of love actively, consciously in this moment, and to extend that love to everyone and everything in this moment. Effortlessness, it says in the last paragraph on page 77. Effortlessness is the way of the kingdom. In the world, effortlessness means that you let down the wall you have built between yourself and all of creation. You no longer resist the lived experience of relationship. That's in italics. Whatever that is, relationship with a cloud, relationship with another person, relationship with a dog or a cat, relationship with April 15th, when you write your government a check. Why not wrap it with Christmas paper and ribbons and send it off with much love? Effortlessness is allowance, acceptance, embracing, trusting, surrendering to the flow of life in each new present moment. Effortlessness is asking to be shown rather than using your intellect to try to decide what to do. Effortlessness is removal of resistance, removal of everything inside yourself that's a roadblock to perceiving yourself as the energy of creation expressing in form. The last paragraph in this section, the beginning of page 78, says, when you have learned to release the barriers or the walls between yourself and whatever is in front of you, when you open the door to your chakras, the energies, the body's energy centers, and you simply allow love to be lived through you, when you look upon another person or another situation or another thing and realize that nothing in this world has the power to hurt you, and nothing in this world has the power to take anything of value from you, then you are free. If you remember to extend love, the energy of creation that you're made of, then you are free. Then you have transcended birth and death. Then the seeker is no more, and only Christ walks this earth. So what do I do then? Breathe, soften, go within. Ask to be shown. Yeah, but what do I do then? Breathe, soften, go within, ask to be shown. The essence of what I desire is not important. The energy that that thought or impression rides in on, that's important. My ability to tune into this creative life flow is what's important, not what my conscious logical mind says about it. I've had probably 5 interactions this week alone with people who are very, very well-intentioned. They are spiritually oriented. They're working psychologically, spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally to try and improve their life and their relationships. At least 5 this week where they're coming in reporting an extensive clash, you know, butting of heads, anger, arguing with their primary focus of their attention, whether it's as a son or a daughter or a husband or a wife or intimate friend. And because they're exposed to the work that I do in my therapy sessions, or they're exposed to this radio show, they're talking about all of these loving principles. And yet they're talking about half an hour, an hour, an hour and a half of angry, charged, back and forth. And it's just amazing because any one of us who engages in that is missing the essence of this work. And any one of us who engages in that is doing what I like to call focusing on the content of a discussion or an interaction when the process is the real issue. The process is the emotions, the tone of voice, the tension, the resistance, the negative perceptions that people have created. That's what's driving the interaction, and people are acting from the process and discussing all about the content, which is just like, it's the highest silliness. So I talk to people about how, you know, I think I related this on Tuesday of this week at 9:48 in the morning, the text message showed up on my phone. And instantly I threw a negative interpretation on it, and I felt all of this tension in me. And I knew, because I've been doing this work for so long, I'm creating all that tension. I also know I can step back and watch my conscious logical mind. I'm a pretty bright guy, right? I know who sent that text message. I have experience with him. I know what his intent is. I know blah, 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 blah. And if I follow that with my intellectual mind, I will ramp up in negativity and in emotional wounds of the past that seem to be related to the present moment. I will create an experience of negativity for myself. And if I respond, if I just sit in those thoughts, I'll send my blood pressure through the roof and ruin my day. If I interact with that person, I say or do something based on those thoughts, I'll create another set of obstacles to love in my internal experience and my relationship with that person. The process was what was important, so I put my hand over my heart space and I talked gently to myself. I did some breathing and EFT tapping. I said, just look at Tim. Look at how you're getting yourself all cranked up. Forget about what's in the text message and what he's asking for and where he lives, and forget about any of that, and just notice your process is you're generating all of this hurt and fear and frustration and resistance. And after that's been dismantled, after my conscious logical mind is back online to be an equal participant with my emotional energy to process this and decide how to move forward, then and only then do I address the content of the situation or the text message or the request. And this is what I keep trying to do with people in my work. I had a young man in my office earlier today, and he started going off on how he was working at this restaurant, and every time the stimulus checks would come out, you know, they would get slammed with orders at their restaurant, and this is just proof that our government is throwing our money away. And he's sitting here in my office, climate-controlled room, fairly comfortable seat he's in, and he's in his mid-20s, and he's getting himself ramped up like he's about to have a panic attack or a rage attack. And I pointed out to him that nothing about the content of what he's talking about is causing any of his upset. And if he first just recognizes how he's generating his frustration, his anger, his resentment, his hurt and confusion and feelings of being helpless, and breathes and softens and lets that go, then when he takes a breath and looks at what he actually has control of in his life, and he makes an educated assessment about what he'd like to apply his mind energy to, he can start making his life better. But first he's got to dismantle the process that's actually creating his upset before it makes any sense to talk about the content. So I realize we've gone all the way to the end of the hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
I hope you have a lovely weekend and a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, the 25th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael another moment to dial in. I'll direct you to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and click on the bullseye or the start here in the upper left corner. Both of those will take you to where you'll find instructions on where to start if you're not familiar with the work. And that's where you'll find all the worksheets and the wake-up sheets and links to the app and all kinds of things. So that would be a good place to start if you're not familiar with the website. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here to be with us and that we get to play this this process of growing the ears to hear what first century Aramaic forgiveness is really about, what it really means. We had a really sweet evening last night. There's a young lady in England, in London, that runs a book study club called, what is it?
Hear My Voice.
Hear My Voice. Hear My Voice Book Study Club. And we did the second session with her group last night, and this time it was recorded. We haven't gotten the recording yet, but it will be put on the website with the special radio shows where we've walked somebody through a worksheet, because that's what we did last night, was walk somebody through a worksheet. I lament that we didn't get the last session. The recording didn't turn out, unfortunately, didn't happen. And but some of the questions and the answers and the way that the thing flowed was just awesome. In any event, we walked somebody through a worksheet, so we'll have a video audio recording of that with lots of questions, lots of backups and false starts. There's a perfect example for starting the worksheet process from someone who was from scratch, who didn't know anything about it. So it was awesome, and we will be doing another session on the 31st. I'm sure Jeannie's probably already got the links pasted in the notes for today, and it is on the website. And then we've agreed that twice a month we will proceed in studying and working with the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Of course, the main focus of the book is not really studying the book, but rather learning forgiveness. The whole idea is to comprehend why, in the context of a mind that perhaps is linked to hostility and fear, it might be wise to actually step into and learn the forgiveness process. As a result of the session last night and some of the questions that were asked, came forth some specific pieces of information from A Course in Miracles, and I came across a lesson that I actually don't even remember having read before, but it just tied in so perfectly with last night's session and some of the things that I've been writing, that I said to go ahead and share some of that lesson, unless, Jeannie, you've got somebody out there with a hand up that has a priority matter for us to cover.
There are no hands up, so go for it.
Okay. All right. We'll do it. So this is chapter 12 in the text, and it's a chapter entitled The Sane Curriculum. And it just makes so many points that I think are really important to comprehend in not necessarily healing yourself, but motivation to doing your healing work. Why would somebody want to do this? And this lesson, I find kind of humorous in the way that it confronts the ego. But at the same time, it's a powerful insight. Melissa starts out and says, only love is strong because it is undivided. So there is one energy of love in the universe, and you're it. Well, but Michael, if you're it and I'm it, how come there are two of us? Well, that's a game the mind plays. That's an illusion of the mind. You remember Albert Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. In other words, your perceptual constructs are based on thoughts that are a lie. And those thoughts go so deep that it's almost impossible to comprehend coming out of it. And in fact, if you remember from the codependence to interdependence intensive, those who were in it, the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind is, if I could just figure this out. The perceptual constructs of your mind, the world that you see, will never allow you to figure it out. That is a non-operational solution. And this single line tells us why. Only love is strong because it is undivided. The strong do not attack because they see no need to do so. I find it interesting that we see all of these dictators around the world, or would-be dictators, and people who admire them call them strong men. It could not be. I mean, how deeply steeped in the world of lies must one be to call someone who slaughters innocent women and children, on and on and on. How insane do you have to be to call that a strong man? That's like about the weakest weakling that exists. Oh, got weapons, so you got weapons and you can beat people with your weapons. It doesn't make the individual who's doing that strong. So the Course here points out the strong do not attack because they see no need to do so. If you see somebody attacking, you know you're looking at weakness. Before the idea of attack can enter your mind, you must have perceived yourself as weak. Why? Because you attacked yourself and you believed that the attack was effective, and therefore you behold yourself as weakened. Remember in the worksheet where we talk about, in the last line of the worksheet, everything that I send out, I get the original of, somebody else gets a carbon copy. Another individuated piece of the oneness gets the carbon copy of what I send out to them, but I get the original. If you're constantly sending out attack, who is it you are attacking? But yourself. And only the weak and the silly do that. No longer perceiving yourself, so as a result of this, having attacked yourself, the Course goes on to say, no longer perceiving yourself and your brothers as equal and regarding yourself as weaker, you attempt to equalize the situation you made. You use attack to do so because you believe that attack was successful in weakening you. So with attack thoughts, we make a self. We make an image of self based on lies. Remember the lesson we've talked about so many times, what is the world? And the Course is just simple as ABC. 99% of people that I've worked with over the years with the Course have difficulty getting this, but it's so simple. The Course says at one point, it's so simple, it cannot fail but to be completely understood. Denied, yes, but not ambiguous. And what the Course says in answer to what is the world is false perception. The whole aim of the Course in Miracles is to give people a set of tools with which to dissolve or forgive the constructs of their minds. Now, if you put that in the Greek context, you'll think, well, they're letting the constructs of their minds off the hook. How does that make sense? No, that's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool of removal. They are removing the false constructs from their minds with forgiveness. That's what you do. So what do you want to do? You want to remove the world of false perception from your mind. And what is that world made of? Well, remember that lesson? What is the world? The world is false perception. It is born of error. It has never left its source. It will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. If I send an attack thought out to someone else, I attack myself. Now I build a false image of self based on weakness and attack because I believe my attack was successful. And I'm going to take that attack out on someone else because that's the only way I know in my weakness and divided mind to get back on what I consider to be or what I falsely believe will be an equal footing. So the Course teaches that you can't be attacked. The Course teaches that it's not real. Lots of people are doing it, but in creation, there's a distinction the Course makes between creation and making things. So in creation, attack is impossible. But in the world where we make up constructs and energy patterns and bounce off of other people with them, those attacks seem real, and we're destroyed by them. But the truth is, in truth, the being that you are has never been touched. It's shiny and new forever. That's why whenever you take, it doesn't matter how deep, how dark, how dirty, how nasty, how ugly, how painful, how traumatic, how grief-stricken one is over something that's happened, or at least their mind tells them it's over something that's happened. The truth is, behind all that is shiny and new you, existent eternally. Wipe away the grime and there you are. You are invulnerable, in the Course's words. So what the Course says here is, recognizing this attack that appears to be of others is how one creates a weakened image of self in the world of perception. So the Course here now is saying, that is why the recognition of your own invulnerability is so important to the restoration of your sanity. So when you recognize who you are and you can't be touched, you've just gone half the way through the healing process. For if you accept your invulnerability, you're recognizing that attack has no effect. Although you've attacked yourself, you'll be demonstrating that nothing really happened. Remember that forgiveness means removal. When you remove the energy that is behind the grief, the pain, and the trauma, the grief, the pain, and the trauma dissipate and disappear. Now, one could say, well, but I just couldn't imagine this issue ever being of no meaning to me, of no pain. Well, and the reason for that is because that's part of the attack thought system. It's how people keep themselves in that trauma. So recognize that by attacking, you've done nothing. Once you realize this, you will no longer see any sense in attack, for it manifestly does not work and cannot protect you. And with that other lesson in the Course, in my defenselessness, my power and safety lie. When I give up defending, I stand in invulnerability. And it goes on to say, once you recognize that your attack can't protect you, yet the recognition of your vulnerability has more than negative value. If your attacks on yourself have failed to weaken you, you are still strong. You therefore have no need to equalize the situation to establish your strength. In other words, no longer living in weakness, you don't have to drag somebody else down. You know, there's that old saying is, how do you stand at head and shoulders above everybody else? You cut off everybody else's head and shoulders. That's the ego's game. But not realizing that when one reaches out to cut off somebody else's head and shoulders, they cut off their own. So you will never realize the utter uselessness of attack, except by recognizing that your attack on yourself has no effects. For others do not react to attack if they perceive it, and if you're trying to attack them, you will be unable to avoid interpreting this as reinforcement. In other words, the more you use the tool, remember that line from What is the World? This false world will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. As long as you cherish attack as the thing that's going to protect you, then the root of that process that keeps people insane is intact within the mind, and the mind will keep creating, making, generating that world that is false. The only place you can cancel out all reinforcement is in yourself. And remember, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shabag or shabak, it means to cancel. It has to do with canceling the drivers that cause the mind to produce pain. You are always the first point of your attack. And if this has never been, then it has no consequences. Remember, we talked about this feminine elemental force in us. Rukadikuj's love is your strength, for yours is divided and therefore not real. So if we think that love is something we're going to get from somebody else, something we're going to give from somebody else, if we think that love is sexual athletics, if we think that love is self-sacrifice, if we think that love is, you know, giving away everything, then we're in that divided state. You cannot trust your own love, your own being when you attack. Cannot learn of perfect love with a split mind, because a split mind has made itself a poor learner. You tried to make the separation real. You tried to make the separation internal because you wanted to retain the characteristics of creation, but with your own content. Yet creation is not of you, and poor learners do need special teaching. You have learning handicaps, the Course says, in a very literal sense. There are areas in your learning skills that are so impaired that you can only progress under constant, clear-cut direction provided by a teacher who can transcend your limited resources. He or she becomes your resource because of yourself. You cannot learn. Where does this teacher reside? Well, let's go back to that Aramaic idea of Rukadikudsha. It's not looking for somebody out there. Remember the definition of Rukadikudsha from the Aramaic, that feminine elemental force that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. When you rely on that strength rather than the strength of your own divided mind, then you start to eradicate generations and generations and generations of insanity. You literally move out of the desert into what was called the Promised Land. You remember that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. Now, anybody who believes that, a group of people who understand astronomy the way the Jews did, that they could possibly get lost in a 35-square-mile hot, sandy place for 40 years is pretty naive. The desert there wasn't talking about a hot, sandy place. The desert is the unconscious. If the unconscious is filled with error, and the unconscious is the source of your thinking and your action and your creative process. Remember that in the ancient teachings, to take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. The word heart there is another code word for the unconscious. Take care what you hold within you. If you hold the belief that attack will serve you, then you will attack yourself and others. And you'll believe in its effects and create literally a whole world, false perception, that you hold dear, because you think it protects you. But this power within you that will bring all correction is within you. It's not outside of you. Remember in Aramaic, the definition of Rukadikudsha, she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So that power resides within you. And the reason that's needed is because the self you rely on can't learn, doesn't know how to learn. The learning situation in which you placed yourself is impossible. And in this situation, you clearly require a special teacher and a special curriculum. Poor learners are not good choices as teachers, either for themselves or anyone else. You would hardly turn to them to establish a curriculum by which you can escape from their limitations. If they understood what is beyond them, they would not be handicapped. You do not know the meaning of love, and that is your handicap. Remember, the Course talks about how the truth cannot be spoken in words. So here we are using words trying to reach the truth. Good luck. Actually, what we're using words for here is to recognize the falsity of what is being said with words. So the Course here offers what the major handicap is of every human being, and that is you do not know the meaning of love. That's why we've developed a nonverbal way of defining love in this work. You've heard us do it 1,000 times. We'll ask the question again. Have you ever held a newborn? Go back to the moment where you held that newborn child and experience the presence of active love. You're never going to get that experience by words. I could stand here and I could lecture for the next year, nonstop, 24/7, 365, about love, and you would never comprehend one thing about love from all of those words, because love cannot be represented. It cannot be captured in words. Truth cannot be represented, cannot be captured in words. We give words a power that words don't have. We try to get words to tell us all about something. Words are never going to tell you about love, but one instant of holding a newborn child will give you the whole experience. If you can remember it, if you want it. But if the self that you think is you makes decisions out of an attacking, pained mind, then you've just set yourself up for failure. So the Course here says, do not attempt to teach yourself what you do not understand, and do not try to set up the curriculum goals where yours have clearly failed. Now, the mind will keep pounding away at it, keep pounding away at it. You know, one of the first things that I do when I'm, you know, we're not traveling anymore, but when we traveled, and we'd be invited to address a Course in Miracles group. You know, if I had a 4x8 board up at the front of the room in letters that would fill the whole 4x8 board, I would write, or at least the top half of it, I would write, don't study a Course in Miracles. And here are all these Course in Miracles students studying the Course. Well, what do you mean, don't study a Course in Miracles? Remember, the Course says, the truth cannot be described in words. What is the Course in Miracles? It's a set of words. Why would you study something that can't give you the truth? That's silliness. There is no book on earth that is going to give you the truth. There is no set of words that's ever going to take you there. We've ascribed to words a power they don't have. Now, what words do have is the ability to describe a set of tools which will take you to the goal, to the direct experience of who you are as love. One of those tools is as simple as holding a newborn and recognizing that's the truth of who you are. Now, really tap in, you know, just try to comprehend the newborn and tell me how you're going to put that into words. Can't be done. But it comes by the experience. And the experience doesn't come by words. We can be directed to the experience by words, but the words cannot give us the experience. So when I direct you to forgiveness and I say, here's how forgiveness works, it's forgiveness that produces the results, not the words that I used about the result. And the result is universal. That is, everyone who uses the tools arrives at the same direct experience. Now, the trick is to hold on to it because the mind with generations and generations and generations and generations of words. Ooh, what was that that had to happen for the Jews to get out of the desert, out of the unconscious? What did they say had to happen? They said the old generation had to die off. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the causes held in the mind from the past had to go. And people are trying to use their minds to figure it out. Rather than study words, use the words for their intended purpose. They'll hand you a set of tools. Then use the tools. So on the second half or the bottom half of the board, when I've written on top, don't study A Course in Miracles with this Course in Miracles study group, the next thing I write on the bottom half of the board is learn forgiveness. That's what we're here for. You are not going to get this any other way than to delete from your mind what doesn't belong there. Pick up the pen, pick up the paper, use the tool. Now, my take is one of the reasons why a lot of people get excited about the tool and think it sounds wonderful until they realize what they have to face and deal with within themselves, and then they throw the tool away. Now, how many times have you heard somebody calling to the show and say, well, how many worksheets have you done on that? I didn't think of that. I've been doing this work for 20 years, but I didn't think of doing a worksheet. Don't study A Course in Miracles. Don't study anything. Don't study A Course in Love. Don't study anything. Learn forgiveness. You can build up and build up and build up wonderful fantasies out of words. Learn forgiveness. Engage the words. If the words can give you direction as to how you can use a tool to produce the result of experiencing yourself and everyone else directly as love, have at it, but use it for its purpose, not to try to have it tell you the truth, because it won't. So the course says, don't set up the curriculum goals in place of what's already there. In other words, where your goals have failed, don't try to determine for yourself what the curriculum should be. And then it goes on to say what happens when we're in that ego state. It says your learning goal has been not to learn. It cannot lead to successful learning. You cannot transfer what you have not learned. And the impairment of the ability to generalize is a crucial learning failure. In other words, once you directly experience yourself or that newborn is love, then the transfer power of being able to recognize whatever you've been told about yourself, whatever your life experience has been, whatever your genetics have been, whatever your power person did, the transfer value of recognizing and experiencing yourself directly as conscious, active, present love is absolutely invaluable. But you can't transfer it unless you've learned it. And you recall earlier this lesson started out saying, you don't know what love is. How are you going to get there? Would you ask those who failed to learn something what the learning aids are for? They do not know. If they could interpret the aids correctly, then they would have learned from them. Our offering is the major learning aid that Yeshua brought 2,000 years ago, and that's reinforced in the course, is forgiveness. And what we've done is reduced it to a step-by-step. You don't have to go figure. I mean, it took me 35 years to learn, to be taught how and why and what that process meant and what it did. You don't have to go and try to figure that out. It's been done for you. There's the worksheet. Go to your app store on your phone and type in Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, and download the world's only forgiveness app and start to do forgiveness. Step by step, there it is. And it's hard for most people to understand because they've got a curriculum, as the course just said here, not to learn. Once we somebody accepted from their power person, you're going to be a failure all your life, then everything you set up based on that unconscious dynamic is set up to cause you to fail. Course goes on here and says, I've said to you that the ego's rule is seek and do not find. Translated into curricular terms, this means try to learn but do not succeed. The result of this curriculum goal is obvious. Every legitimate teaching aid, every real instruction, and every sensible guide to learning will be misinterpreted, since they are all for facilitating the learning of this strange curriculum is against. So the misinterpretation by a mind that says, seek but do not find, means everything's going to be misinterpreted because its very basic premise is against what the curriculum is for. If you are trying to learn how not to learn, and the aim of your teaching is to defeat itself, what can you expect but confusion? Curriculum does not make sense. This attempt at learning has so weakened your mind that you cannot love, for the curriculum you've chosen is against love and amounts to a course in how to attack yourself. So until one goes into their own unconscious mind and removes the root of attack, the mind will always weave every perception, even the most wonderful, loving, seeming words one can find, one will always weave it into, use it for attack, because that's the mind's basic premise. Now, I'll offer that I don't believe that humans are designed to have an unconscious mind. You and I are not designed to have one unconscious thought in us. And how many times do you say, oh my God, I didn't realize that was in there? Gee, I didn't know I felt that way. I didn't know that I held that kind of thinking. So when you come from a bloodline, from a genetic propensity toward failure, and you attempt to learn but fail, that weakens the mind so that you cannot experience yourself as love, because the curriculum you've chosen is against love and amounts to a course on how to attack yourself. A supplementary goal in that curriculum is learning how not to overcome the split that makes its primary aim believable. And you will not overcome the split in this curriculum, for all your learning will be on its behalf. Yet your mind speaks against your learning, as your learning speaks against your mind, and so you fight against all learning and succeed. Succeed at failing, in essence, the Course is saying here. For that is what one wants. But perhaps you do not realize even yet that there's something you want to learn, and that you can learn it because it is your choice to do so. You who have tried to learn what you do not want should take heart. For although the curriculum you set for yourself is depressing indeed, it is merely ridiculous if you look at it. Is it possible that the way to achieve a goal is not to attain it? Now we're coming a step closer to understanding the real curriculum of the Course, and that is whenever you load a goal into your mind that elicits any kind of response based in hostility or fear, you collapse that hostility and fear-based construct of your mind by canceling the goal that elicited it. Notice, unless you're just a generally miserable person, be with everybody in your life as long as they're doing everything you want them to do. And notice the only time you curse under your breath, notice the only time that you hold your breath, that you use the voice, that you tighten, that you lock up, that you go into that sympathetic, dominant fight, flight, fright, or freeze state. Notice the only time that happens is when somebody, yourself or someone else, is not fulfilling a goal you hold for them. the most ridiculous thing that the world of false perception can conceive of is to cancel a perfectly wonderful, delightful, beautiful goal. But that's what forgiveness means you must do. But Michael, in what world does that make sense? I mean, here I am. Yes, I'm really angry at Bill because he's not honoring me the way I want him to. Okay, so when you said to me that you're in anger because Bill's not honoring you the way you want him to, what you just told me is, number one, you're living in denial. The anger that's moving you, you think belongs to Bill. And that in your mind, on being honored, there's anger. That's what you just told me with that sentence. Bill makes me so angry when he doesn't honor me. You just told me you've got a file in your mind with anger in it. And that file is labeled honored. How are you going to get to the root of it and clean the brood of it out? You're going to cancel the goal for Bill to honor you. And what happens is that surface mind's projection, its construct, now collapses in on itself. Remember that Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. That little tiny framework that we call the conscious mind is just right up there on the surface, and everything else is hiding underneath. How do you get into the underneath part? How do you get into this massive unconscious? If you listen to the average psychologist, they'll tell you 90, 95, as much as 98% of our thinking is unconscious. And we're not designed to have an unconscious mind. That veil, that barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious needs to be open. How do you do it? Well, you recognize that every time you load a particular goal, and someone doesn't fulfill that goal for you, yourself or someone else, and you go into anger, then you realize now, something is hiding in my unconscious is anger, and anger is a drug, and therefore something must be hiding in my unconscious that is painful. And now how am I going to get to it? Am I going to figure it out in this 9-bit perceptual space? Not in a million years. But what I can do is I can cancel the goal for Bill to honor me, and then my perception, my disturbed pain perception that seems to be about Bill collapses in on itself, and I now get to go to the root. Now, I may have to do that many times before I'm receptive enough, before I'm willing enough, before I'm able, before I'm vital enough to process the underlying pain that's there. That's why when they said to Yeshua, how many of these worksheets do we have to do? Is 7 enough? How many times do we need to forgive? Is 7 times enough to forgive my brother? And he said, no, 77 times 70. An infinite number of times till you're complete. How many times will you dip into your unconscious before you get back to perhaps that memory from great-great-great-great-grandfather who knows what he did and what happened? But that energy was stored within your genes and passed to you. How many worksheets will you do till you're vital enough to be able to reach that depth within yourself and clean it out? Well, it depends on your willingness. It's one of the big factors. Last night we did a worksheet in the book study group, and the woman who did the worksheet had never done one before and was very confused about it. She's like, well, I don't even know where to start. Great. What a great place to start. And she got to some genetic stuff, some memories of great-grandmother, or pardon me, I believe it was grandmother, telling her about great-grandmother's traumas, and that's what came up for her. Or something that she thought had to do with a friend. That's how forgiveness works. So the Course says, resign now as your own teacher. This resignation will not lead to depression. It's merely a result of an honest appraisal of what you've taught yourself and of the learning outcomes that have resulted. Under the proper learning conditions, which you can neither provide nor understand, you'll become an excellent learner and an excellent teacher. but it is not so yet and will not be so until the whole learning situation, as you have set it up, is reversed. Your learning potential, properly understood, is limited because it will lead you to experiencing directly the active presence of love. And the world has called that active presence of love the Creator by many different names, God. You can teach the way to that as you learn it if you follow a teacher who knows the way to that experience and understands the curriculum for learning it. The curriculum is totally unambiguous because the goal is not divided and the means and the end are in complete accord. You need only offer undivided attention. And here's the simple bottom line. And the mind will question, because its rule is seek but do not find. So here's the answer. It was kind of fun last night. I finally had to take the piece of paper that the worksheet's printed on and held it up in front of the screen after I answered the question, well, what do I do about this? And they said, well, here's what you do. You enter into forgiveness. And they went, yeah, but what about how do I do this? It's like, wait a minute, stop. Look, here it is. I just told you exactly how to do it. Now your job is to do it, not to keep playing the game of, well, I don't know how. Excuse me. We just step-by-step explained exactly how to do it. On the website, if you go to whyagain.org, if you look at the radio show archives, there's a set of archives that are special radio shows. There are at least 20 different radio shows where either Dr. Tim or myself or Jeannie has walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process, step-by-step-by-step. Here's what you do. And yet most people who live in the world of, well, but I'm here to seek but never find, to set up the goal of learning so that I never learn. And then somebody will once again, and this went about, I don't know, three or four rounds last night. Well, but what do I do? And I finally held it up in front of the camera. I pointed and said, here it is. We just went over the whole thing. Here's how you do it. What's it look like? I have pain perception. I look in my mind. I identify the goal that's driving my pain perception. In identifying that goal, I become willing to cancel that goal. Not because I can't have it, not because I don't want it, not because I don't deserve it, but because I finally recognize that every time I load that goal into my mind and somebody isn't fulfilling it, I'm in pain. My pain, my internally hidden unconscious pain is exposed to me, although my mind has massaged into a picture of somebody else. So I say, Bill is really causing me all this pain. But remember, Bill, it was Harry, and remember before Harry, it was Hortense, and it was, and it was, and it was, and it was. 87 different times with 42 different people. I cancel the goal not because I can't have it, not because I don't deserve it, not because I don't want it, but because every time I load it in my mind, it elicits, if somebody doesn't fulfill that goal for me, it elicits my pain. And so it is now understanding that it is the pathway into healing my pain. You need only offer your undivided attention to that. Everything else will be given to you. For you really want to learn right, and nothing can oppose the decision of you, the Creator's Son. Your learning is as unlimited as you are. So let's follow the instructions. Let's forget about trying to learn the Course, because it's not the truth. Remember, the truth can't be spoken in words. Learn forgiveness. That's what we're here to support. And so that world of false perception that's based in pain, that world that was made up by me to take the place of the truth, Remember that lesson, what is the world, says it will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. And forgiveness is not about the Greek trickery that if I let you off the hook, I've engaged in forgiveness. But it's a totally internal process of collapsing perception and freeing ourselves from the constructs, the entitlements of the past. Forgiveness is liberation from the image-making capability of the mind and all thought disorder that underlie its function. If you're in pain, you're not in pain because thus and so did this and that. You're in pain because there's pain in you. Collapse the false perception. Collapse the lies by canceling the goal, and you get to go to access your pain directly. Now, that's not Dr. Feelgood, but it works. It's time to let go of the thought disorders that I made up along the way and that I bought into, that I learned from my culture, that I inherited from my past. And so one must be prepared to learn an entirely new skill. True forgiveness doesn't look like anything you've learned from the world of perception. It appears that we see a whole world outside of us. We've never seen anything with our eyes. You've never seen your father, your mother, your sister, your brother. You've seen your mind's constructs about them. And if there's unresolved pain in what your goal calls forward to build a construct about them, then your pain will be integrated into your brain's image of them, and you'll think they are the cause of your pain, and you need to collapse that construct. Our seeing is nothing but a world constructed by our minds. Seeing happens in the mind, not with the eyes. You remember, one of the most basic lessons of the Course is, I have given this all the meaning it has for me. So it's collapsing this skill called perception, the image-making capability with which the mind constructs its world to match what it's been trained through generations is familiar, seems desirable, and is true. The only feature actually demanded by this skill is that it is familiar. It has to fit the family pattern and keep us in the role to which we've been assigned. That role was generally assigned by our power person, and we bought into it. The role may be painful, degrading, abhorrent to us, but it's our role, and therefore it is desirable. It's often totally false. It's a fraud. But having been convinced that it's who we are, and having forgotten the true identity of ourselves as love, and accepting this false identity as true, there may be many times where the bony fingers of perception that want to grab you by the throat and drag you into its world have to be loosened, pulled back, unfurled, to let loose of those constructs of the generations. And those constructs are so real looking. They come complete with power, sound, emotions, literally a whole world that we substitute for life. And that world restricts the flow of life through us, and that's what leads to death. That's what leads to all diseases. Why would anyone tolerate such a fraud? Because it's familiar, family. It's what has been instilled in us from the very beginning. And because we made it, we admire it and can see no fault in it. If there is pain in it, it is totally false. And when we believe in it, substituting it for the truth becomes what we habitually engage in. We replace the actual world with the one that we construct between our ears. Few are aware, and even fewer will admit, that everyone lives in the construct of their own making. There's a great metaphor as told about Michelangelo, where an awestruck admirer looks at his finished statue of David and says, "How did you do that?" And Michelangelo says, "David was always in there in the marble. I just took away everything that was not him. That's a perfect parallel for forgiveness out of the first century Aramaic language and out of A Course in Miracles. It takes away. It doesn't add anything. Nothing can be or needs to be added. And it's a quantum leap different than anything ever presented about forgiveness in English and Latin and Greek or Hebrew. It has nothing to do with theology. It's the most profound psychological, physiological, energetic, and genetic truth that's ever been presented. Forgiveness will dissolve the world of pain, the world of false perception, and put us back on track with the truth of who we are. So that's what we're here to play with, and I hope that all makes sense for you. And it looks like we've got about 9 or 10 minutes left, so I'm going to complete at this point. That kind of went on a little longer than I had originally anticipated. And check in with Miss Jeannie if you're out there in the phone queue and something about that doesn't make sense or does make sense or there's something to share or a question about it. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show. And then if you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. We're down to about 7 minutes. So someone press 1. We have time for a question and an answer.
Yeah.
And we have a hand up.
Great. Let's
area
go for
code it. 541. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Celinda here.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
Hello.
How are you?
One thing... I'm very good, thank you. Now, I just wanted to let you know that I did send a packet off to you that has a bunch of little goody information in it. One was that salmon article. I had to actually copy it because I find the link to get the download from the Internet, so I copied it and sent it to you. I think a poem that I copied that you were interested in. And the only thing I haven't done is to specifically find the Hans Seeley quote about the altruistic self-interest, or I've seen it shown as altruistic egotism, but I vaguely remember it as being self-interest. But I have discovered that it is in his book, Stress Without Distress, so I'll let you know that.
Sweet, thank you.
You're so welcome. And there's a little butterfly in there for Aria Rain. Little tiny things that
sweet.
Are just things that I think a small little girl would like. So, because my small little girl would like that. So there you go.
there you go. Well, that's awesome. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I also have a couple of
we appreciate that way you think about her and support her.
Oh, she is a sweetie, and I was not the kind of grandmother that I needed to be when I was little because I was bouncing all over and really not supportive at all. I was too much involved with myself. So now I'm finding opportunities to catch up, learn what I'm
well, we appreciate being the object of that.
You're so welcome. And also what I would love to share with you is, for one thing, a lot of things that I had, quote, unquote, known with my brain are now all of a sudden taking on a whole new dimension of meaning for me. One of the things I learned way back when I was a born-again Christian was, and that's not a pejorative term, by the way, a conventional Christian would be a better way of putting it, that I have run across the understanding from a teaching that in the Hebrew language, and I would suspect it's the same thing in Aramaic, I'm not sure, is that the word to know automatically was understood to mean direct experience. You didn't know until the body learned it, until the body experienced it. And this morning I just thought, it reached a deeper understanding. I think maybe it's percolating down to my coffee pot's bottom here. And so I thought I'd share that with you. And also,
I don't know. I don't know whether that would be true in Aramaic, but it sounds accurate. It sounds like it would be accurate.
Well, it certainly resonated on a much deeper level than me, than between my ears. So I'm going to run with it for this moment in time.
Makes sense.
And also one other sharing I have that I thought I would just share with you. Today, at least I was the first time I was consciously aware. Maybe it was happening before and I didn't notice it. But I was consciously aware, as you were talking, of being in a state of not efforting, Michael, of just, and I'm sure you and Jeannie have experienced this, oh, well, I'm not sure of anything, but I suspect you may have, where all of a sudden I was listening to you, and it was almost as if I was about 4 or 5 years old, like when I mentioned to you I was in little Bible school in the summer when I was 4 and singing those little gospel songs. And it was just a sweet download state. It was very
nice.
Strange. And I was just listening. It was just like a little sponge absorbing or something and taking it
sounds
all in.
Like, yeah, sounds like you're out of your mind.
Oh,
and,
I'd love
and,
to
and
be
the
out.
Child, you know, the child, the young child, is not yet locked into brain consciousness, brain awareness, the so-called thinking of the mind. And that's where Yeshua said, be as a little child, go back to experiencing the world directly as it is, rather than substituting this thing called perception for the world as it is, which is what education in our culture has come to mean. You know, the actual meaning of the word educate, educare, means to draw out. But notice in our culture, it means to put in and trap kids in their minds into this piece of information that will, in essence, make them good commercial servants as opposed to human beings.
Actually, what we do in this culture is entrain, which is a direct opposite from my perception or my understanding.
It is.
Yeah.
Indoctrination as opposed to education.
Right. Training, like you would train a dog.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And maybe we ought to stop. Maybe we could stop training our dogs and let them educate us. Yes.
For sure. Well, we're still. Oh, go ahead. We've got about a minute and a half.
Okay. The other thing is that I really have a resonance with the inner child. And that almost this morning almost felt like maybe I'm getting in touch with my inner child so she can feel safe enough to let go, because I went through a therapy program one time of reparenting with a dear friend of mine who was a therapist. And, you know, she was reparenting me, and the upstart was, or the end result, what she wanted was for me to be able to reparent myself. And of course, I always realized I could never do anything by myself. So I'm asking spirit to show me, and then being willing to be quiet and not take over the reins once I think I've been shown. So it's all a problem.
Got to be out of your mind. That's
yes,
it.
Sir.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, young lady. Well, we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to say thank you for your thoughts and comments. And everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
I choose to live more consciously, evolving continuously.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time. on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.